It's time for what Podcast International called the greatest podcast in history. Open your ears, because it's time for Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.
Okay, everybody, this is Man Thoughts with Brian Callen, and
Man Thoughts?
I call it Man Thoughts.
Man Thoughts.
Yeah,
Man Thoughts.
No, Man Thoughts, because my manager, Robert Hartman, he said to me, you got to label yourself. You can't just call it the Brian Callen Show. You got to call
Why
it
is
Man
that?
Thoughts.
Wouldn't that be?
I don't know. It seems like it's better. Your phone, it was supposed to be a professional podcast. That's I'm right. with Artie Lang. This is what happens.
This is my trainer. I'm sorry.
Oh, it's your trainer.
It's no, wait, I'll just the way I'll stop.
Okay. Listen, these mics are not expensive, so you got to keep it right close to your mouth. I'm at Artie Lang's apartment, penthouse apartment overlooking
in Hoboken,
overlooking
the eye of the storm.
Yeah, overlooking the Manhattan skyline. And in fact, after Sandy, I'm looking down at these docks, and they were uprooted, which is unbelievable. Oh wait, I got to do. Let me do my sponsor.
They're not rooted in anything.
Let me do my sponsor. Hold on, this is not. It's supposed to be a formal podcast, dude.
Much like you, they have no roots.
This is very true. Yeah. I'm a gypsy, a real nomad.
You grew up in Egypt.
I grew up all over the world. My podcast is now sponsored by Audible, like every other podcast.
What is that?
It's you don't know what Audible is?
No.
It's books on tape.
Oh.
And I listen to one of the reasons you look at me and you go, Brian, you're incredibly athletic, but also well-read, which is, I think, how you describe me almost always.
I tell most people you come from money.
Yeah, what you should do... But what you should also say is he's well listened, because I listen to books on tape.
Yeah, that's the new way to do it now.
Well, you drive so much in L.A. that I actually do use Audible all the time. And by the way, go to audiblepodcast.com/manthoughts. Audible. I'm the worst at advertising.
That's easy.
Go to it really rolls off the tongue.
Yeah.
It's audiblepodcast.com/manthoughts. I'm actually looking at it on my email. And then,
like
and you'll get a free download.
It's almost like working with Howard Stern again. You're brilliant at the live reads.
I appreciate it. And get a free download. Just, you know what to do? You can go to Audible and actually sample books. Sample Blood Meridian and listen to Richard Poe read Cormac McCarthy's Blood Meridian. Mm-hmm. It's the crazy. When you like hear that, you go, oh, that's how English is supposed to be spoken.
Oh, okay. Right. I don't read books. I write them. The second one coming out.
You do?
In the spring, yeah.
Is your book will probably be on Audible.
I don't know. The first book was I made a tape of it.
It was on Audible.
You can get
Artie Lang's book on Audible. People actually ask me what to read. What's the name of the? I can't remember the
Too
name.
Too Fat to Fish.
What's the second one called?
Crash and Burn. Yeah.
Yeah, you've had a very colorful life. You know, Artie and I were on the original cast of Mad TV.
That's right.
And I watched Artie. He was always I've always said this. Mm-hmm. You're the funniest person. Raw funny.
Oh,
you're the funniest human being I've ever met in my
That's
life.
That's very nice.
And the funniest person off the cuff I've ever met.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've never seen anybody. One time I watched you, we were doing Mad TV, and you were making up songs with Mary Shear.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember being like so humbled at how good you were at just coming up with rhyming funny songs.
They were actual songs that had been written before by somebody else.
You got somebody who does that for you?
I was singing LL Cool J's first album. Not a lot of people knew about it.
I didn't know that. So you were the shadow writer or the shadow singer?
I would just tell people I made it up. And a lot of people wondered how I knew so much about Linden Boulevard in Queens.
Oh, God, Linden Boulevard. Oh, good old times.
That was like my favorite Woody Allen joke in a Woody Allen movie, in Crimes and Misdemeanors. Mia Farrow writes a love letter.
Yeah.
And she goes, your love letter was beautiful. And he goes, well, I plagiarized most of it from James Joyce. He said, I'm sure you were wondering about all the references to Dublin. That's what I would do. I would just say stuff that I knew was obscure.
He's the greatest. Woody Allen, I was thinking about him as, talking about my buddy Dove Davidoff, who I think you know.
Oh, I know Dove Davidoff, yeah.
And he read a book on Woody Allen. There's never been anybody like him. You want to talk about the greatest filmmaker of all time? I mean, and span every genre?
Prolific.
I like using words like genre, but, which is one of the reasons I brought this up. But yeah, he's prolific, but also like went from Crimes and Misdemeanors to Manhattan to Zelig to Bananas to everything you want to know about sex.
Heavy drama.
Yeah.
And slapstick comedy.
Yeah.
And then he married his daughter.
and then he married his daughter, and it all went.
That's how you get away with that.
Yeah, and for 20
I'm
years.
Creative. I need to fuck my daughter.
That's it. Arch your back and arch your back. Lick your lips, and we'll just go from there. He really loves his daughter.
Yeah, if you're creative enough, you can do shit like that, I guess. I don't know. I think it was horrible.
Well, I had an argument. I was in L.A., and I had an argument with a bunch of these sort of these actors who are older. And In fact, I think Doris Roberts was at the table, but she didn't partake in the argument, but there were a bunch of people around. And they were saying that Roman Polanski shouldn't go to jail.
Oh, God.
Because the girl was 13, but it was, you know, back in the day, and he's an artist. And I was like, listen, let me explain. I got a daughter.
That's right.
You have sex with my daughter, and you're 33, and she's 13. I'm going to come after you, and I'm going to cut your fucking head off. That's what I'm going to do. I'm actually going to cut your head off.
Whether you direct
Chinatown or not. Yeah, whether you direct a Chinatown.
Well, that's the end of the argument to me when you meet these people. Say, you're like, okay, say it's your daughter. He gave her Quaaludes and fucked her.
In the ass.
Yeah. I mean, that's ridiculous.
It's kind of hot, but it's also ridiculous. And the point is.
Yeah, no, and then he goes to France like a pussy and he, you know.
Yeah, so as I'm cutting his head off, I'm going to say, dude, I really liked your movies. I'm sorry to do this, but I on principle, got to cut your fucking head off.
That's right.
So anyway, that was how the argument went, and it didn't end very well.
What did Doris Roberts think?
No, she didn't say anything. She was with people.
It would be great if she was defending him.
No, Doris, I think, wouldn't defend. She stayed out. I love that woman. But
Who were the actors?
The actors were kind of friends. They were people from the actor's studio, like old school, like stage actors. I didn't know any of them. But,
right.
But I mean, I was just like, you got to be fucking kidding me. Yeah. I, you know.
Those assholes.
It didn't end very well. I think I got up and left. I didn't, but in my mind I did.
I doubt this even happened.
No, you're right. Sounds like a good story for the pod.
Doris
I never met her. Doris who?
That's a great name. I don't know where to drop though.
It really is.
You're gonna make something.
Oh, really? I can't get a table at this restaurant. You ever heard of Doris Roberts? She's a friend of mine. She was in my acting class.
Yeah. Oh, she was?
I was in an acting class in L.A.
That's a great move. He was one of those guys, after you got on a TV show, you still took acting.
Of course.
For pussy.
Not only for pussy. Of course for pussy.
Like Tobey Maguire's in the fourth Spider-Man. I'd like to learn how to do Ibsen now. Jerk.
Well, yeah, I was able to bang all my scene partners, which, of course, as you know, I did.
I know.
But also the fact that you'd watch train wrecks. I love a train wreck. You'd see these actors who were like in their 40s had never had a job or an agent.
I know.
And they were still in acting class, and I just couldn't get enough of them.
They're almost ready to audition after 40 years.
They'd back a U-Haul up and set up a whole set for a 15-minute scene, and it would still suck.
The most pathetic thing is stand-up comedy classes. That is really...
Oh, that's the best.
What a rip-off that is. That's like, you know...
Yeah, not to put my buddy Kyle Cease down, and I'm not, but he ran a comedy boot camp. And
I don't mind people like P.T. Barnum said, it's a shame to let a hustler keep their money or a sucker keep their money. You know?
That's it.
You're going to teach people how to do stand-up comedy?
Kyle was running a boot camp.
Who?
Kyle Cease. He's a really funny comic, actually, and he was running a boot camp. And at the end of it, he said, we'll put you up in front of, like, you know, casting directors and people. And Doug Stanhope said, listen, man, the worst thing you can do is give somebody a 5-day crash course and then put them up in front of people that matter in the business.
It
takes a long time.
No,
my friend Courtney Sherman over here, she is very funny, but she's got some time to develop. And, you know, they're talking about putting her up in different TV venues. And I'm like, just wait. There's no reason there's no reason as a comic to really. Just wait. Give yourself
you
3, 4, or 5 years, because you're going
to
look back on it and go, why the hell did I do it then? I could have, you know.
Yeah, you don't have to rush it.
When was the last time you shot a special?
3 years ago.
Were you going to do another one?
Yeah, I'm doing one in the spring.
Good.
I did a comedy.
Don't look too excited about it.
3 years ago. I don't know.
You, I thought you were about to literally fall asleep.
What do you want me to do?
Yeah, yeah. you just fall asleep and start snoring into the mic.
I did an hour and a half of shit on the Comedy Central DVD special thing 3 years ago. But then I went to rehab and like psych wards and everything for 2 years. So, and then
talking to the mic. If you're going to talk about psych wards, bring
that's
it.
That's where I accumulated more material. So now I have another hour to do.
It's great. Were you in a psych ward?
I was in 3 psych wards.
What was that like?
You haven't lived till you played Scrabble in a psych ward. So I played Scrabble in a psych ward.
Did you really?
Yeah, with an 80-pound chick. There's 3 people in the Scrabble game. An 80-pound woman who was a crystal meth addict, and like a 400-pound guy who was on Thorazine and methadone, and he hadn't gotten his medication yet. So I'm keeping score, which already makes it an awful Scrabble game. And it's just, you know, like, so the big guy goes last, and when he goes, there's an open G.
Right.
And he just put an M and an R next to the G. It said GMR. And I was scared of the guy. And I didn't care. I said, let's add that up. Great word. You know. And the crystal meth woman starts going, that's not a word. So she's yelling at him. And I'm fucking so mad. I'm like kicking her under the table. Like, it's a fucking word. What's your problem? She goes, no, it's not a word. And I felt like going, like, really? Is this your cause in life? Like we're in a psych ward playing Scrabble. It's over, guys.
It's over,
man. Like, we went out in life and tried whatever we tried to do. And it didn't work for us. So now in the world we've created, Hillbilly Jim just made a word, GMR, okay?
GMR.
I don't want to fucking get my ass kicked. So let's add up GMR. So the time to make a stand in life was when someone offered you crystal meth. That's when you should have been, miss, hey, that's not a word. Hey, I'm not doing that. Now you fucking go with it. And they got into a big argument. I mean, I was in three psych wards.
What is a psych ward like? You know, it's funny.
Terrible.
Well, you're
crazy.
You're,
people. I've been in a jail.
Crazy, but you're not crazy.
Well, here's the thing. I've been in L.A. County Jail, and that's way better because people are sane.
Yeah.
And a psych ward, the worst part of, thing about a psych ward is crazy people don't know how to shit. Like, they don't know what to do with their shit. Like, so if you go in a bathroom after crazy people, like, there could be shit anywhere. Like, they don't know what to do with it. They throw it like monkeys. And at least in jail, people know to shit in a toilet and everything.
Yeah, yeah. So believe it or not.
A psych ward's way worse than I was in L.A. County for a week for possession
of coke. I remember that. You were handcuffed to a guy with knife wounds in his back, right?
With a guy with,
and you got recognized for My Big Fat Mama,
yeah,
right?
My white mama. The fat was implied.
Sorry.
This kid I was handcuffed to for 6 hours while we were getting processed. He was a Mexican kid. He had his entire back was covered with a tattoo of Speedy Gonzalez. And we talked. He had a knife wound. The Mexican mafia had a hit out on him. And I'm handcuffed to the guy.
Oh, nice. And, that's fun.
A kid recognized me from Mad TV, and I got my own cell. I got my own cell for a week. But I showered. You were pretty safe.
I mean, you're cute, but you weren't going to get banged by it.
Run.
There are other guys they would have chosen. I'm just saying.
No, I was never happier to be less sexy in my fucking life. I showered in between a Blood and a Crip.
Is that
true story? And in the shower, they have no colors. You don't know how, you know.
So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You can't tell who the Blood or who the Crip is.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Honestly, I took three showers. No, I mean, it creates, you got to have a sense of humor about the stuff. So,
but you're not, see, you're not crazy. I know you went through stuff, but I mean,
no,
it's funny.
I started doing coke, and then I got off of coke, and then I did heroin. Heroin is just.
Yeah, that doesn't work out well.
No.
Nobody's ever said, I did a bunch of heroin, and then things got better. That's probably never been said.
No, I do. I will say this, though. It's I have a personal trainer I've been working out with for a year, and I think I have a lawsuit, quite frankly. After a year, I don't think anything's happened. I think I'm actually worse shape.
You can't sip brandy on the bike.
No, I just think I should be in better shape.
Well, we'll talk about
it. And he's got, like, a new deck, and I, you know. I sometimes working out, like, I'll stop. And I'll be sweating, and they'll say stupid things to me. And I go, what's the matter? I go, heroin. I can't forget heroin. You know, it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
And one time he told me, he goes, have you tried running? And I said, what are you talking about? He goes, he told me that a runner, he's real
You get
positive.
A runner's high?
Yeah. He goes, like, a runner's high is as good as a heroin high.
That's a guy who's never done heroin.
Well, that's what I said to him. I said, have you tried heroin? And he said, no. And I said, well, you're not qualified to be in the conversation. I said, I've done both. I've led a full life. I've done heroin, and on occasion I've run.
Yeah.
And it's not even close.
It's not even the same area code.
So, I felt like making him a deal. Like, you do heroin, I'll run.
Did you smoke it or did you shoot it?
No, I snorted it.
Oh, you snorted it?
Yeah, I used to get the good shit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the morphine, that kind of morphine derivative, that compound, they say is something that you have to deal with the rest of your life.
It's unbelievable. Like, once you, I did it on the road for the first time.
Yeah.
I started taking painkillers to deal with all the traveling I was doing, and I was taking like 30 Vicodin a day.
Oh, that's good for you. It's good for your liver.
This manager at a comedy club, honestly, it's a chap. It's the name of a chapter in my first book.
What's it called? Your liver?
He goes, you should do heroin. It's better for your liver. That's what he said.
That's a helpful guy.
He said, you snorted and buy. So he got me a couple of bags of heroin, and I went back to my hotel room, and I did it.
Did he have horns and a pointy tail? Or?
He was a good looking guy, you know. And I always said the devil would be a real good looking guy with heroin.
I tell you what, yeah. And that's
I literally said out loud, knowing my addiction, level. I said the euphoria was so amazing. It was amazing.
Yeah.
I hit the pillow and I was like, I'm in trouble. I said out loud, I'm in trouble.
Because you knew you couldn't.
I chased it for 6 years. I just wanted to be like that all the time.
6 years you did heroin.
Yeah.
I never knew that.
Yeah, no, well.
I mean, I knew you when you were doing blow in the pavilions in the middle of the supermarket. And throwing fruit at our manager. I remember that. I think you were throwing fruit.
That's right. We had the same manager.
Yeah, you were chucking fruit at him. Yeah. And then I think you said, you're fired.
Something like that.
And then I think you pulled out a little thing, a little spoonful of blow in front of the cop.
No, I didn't do that. I took a swing at an L.A. cop, which I would not advise.
Oh, right, yeah, that's a bad idea. Although the
especially
L.A.
if you've been up for 5 days betting on the Lakers.
Why would you bet on the Lakers?
A big roundhouse swing. The guy, like, I missed the guy. Graham, he threw me on, and he found cocaine.
Oh, he found blowing.
It was like fell out.
Oh, okay.
And that's when I went to jail.
It's better to take a swing at an LA cop. I find them to be way more professional than say like a Philly cop.
No, no. Well, any cop is
New York or Philly. They would have. They
yeah, no. LA cop. This was right after like the riots and. You know, we were there. And they
That's
went,
right.
You know, it was really tense.
I bought two guns.
OJ thing.
Yep.
You know, and yeah, I might have said something like, "Go beat up a black guy." Or something. I was trying to. I was.
And
to
he was black.
Them, trying to hit them where they live. yeah. So
you
they
killed were, him with your acerbic wit, with your razor
right,
sharp
exactly.
tongue.
They didn't get a lot of the references I was making. Yeah. So you know.
Yeah.
It is. It's been a crazy life. But I have the last few years, and then I went to rehab.
Right.
Down in Miami.
Was there ever a thing in rehab? Was there ever anything you heard in rehab that changed your life a little bit? Was there ever, like, was there, you know, I always talk about sort of milestones or seminal
right.
moments in your life where somebody says something and you go, what the fuck? I never thought of that.
Yeah,
they give you perspective that you
some
can kind of hang.
Thing.
Well, yeah, you can hang like the rest of your life on a hook. Like you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah.
That gives me like something to hold on to.
Right. Someone said something to me about cocaine the first time I went to rehab to get off of coke. So someone said something that I thought was kind of profound about coke. They said, the best part about cocaine is going to get it. And that's completely the truth. Like you find out. You know, someone has it, and you go get it. It's so exciting. It's like going to a ride if you're a kid, like an amusement park. And then when you get it, you get – and then running out of it is the worst feeling on the planet.
I dated a meth addict who told me that she – I didn't know she was doing meth until later, but she told me that
I
her
did
heart
–
I didn't. I'm not drug savvy. I didn't – you know. Meth is like
–
Well, but she had – I don't know. She was able to –
Did you wonder why she would walk to St. Louis every weekend?
Somehow she would. She was able to deal with it. Like somehow it didn't affect
her
physically.
That's a hard drug to hide.
Well, she said her heart would start beating the minute I would leave town. I'd go. You know, away, and she knew that's when she could score.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and just disappear into a cave somewhere.
That's
and
romantic.
Yeah, yeah. It was very romantic.
My heart starts to beat when you leave.
Yeah. Exactly.
Because my real lover, crystal meth, is coming.
Is waiting.
Yeah. No. That's a bad one. Amphetamines, all that stuff. You stay up a long time, heroin. The rehab I went to for heroin, no one ever said anything profound. Like it was.
No.
You just. You
well, you're in the trenches. They give you. What do they tell you?
Well, you know, it's a lot of stuff that sounds like cliches, and it is. You know, they talk in bumper stickers.
Yeah.
But there was this one guy. This counselor, his name was Dave, and he was a Southern guy, and the alcoholic who had been clean for a while. And he was the nicest guy, and I would say the meanest shit to him. And he wasn't used to, like, Northeastern, like, mean sarcasm. Yeah. And he was so offended by what I would say. He would try to get me out of bed, and I just wouldn't get out of bed for 2 weeks. And we had yoga in the morning and, like, community meeting. We had to give your goals for the day, and I just wouldn't get out of bed. And his job, he talked like this. He goes, Artie, you're going to be late for community. Like the nicest, you're going to be late, Artie. Come on, get up. And he would repeat what I would say because he couldn't believe it. Artie, you're going to be late for yoga. What do you mean you hope my mother gets AIDS? What is that? Like my mother's not even alive. What do you mean you hope someone should dig up my mother and give her AIDS? You're not getting this program. I don't think you're getting this program. And you couldn't have shampoo. Some shampoo has alcohol in it. And oh, you can't have shampoo with alcohol in case you try to like drink it, which is the most pathetic.
Yeah, that's when you've hit rock bottom. When you're drinking shampoo.
Yeah, he was so
we're playing Scrabble in a sideboard.
When they would let us, when they would let us shop, he had a check. I would purposely buy shampoo, like crazy shampoos, with alcohol, so he would have to take them from me. You know, like he would come, so he would go like me and my roommate would laugh. He'd go, "Artie, Salon Selective's level 6." That you can't have, it's got alcohol. And I go, "Well, fuck you, I have unmanageable hair, Dave." And he goes, you're not getting this program. He goes, "You can't." I would love him to catch me like, "Artie's doing a line of Head and Shoulders. I think he's in trouble." But all it was time away from getting high. Like everything, nothing was said that was so brilliant.
Yeah.
But after 3 months of being away from heroin and thinking clearly.
Yeah.
Then I started to feel better. I started to feel normal.
Right.
And
I think that, I always say, I think most of us are alcoholics or drug addicts in one way or another. Everybody has addictions to food.
Yeah. People call addicts abnormal. I think people who don't want to be high all the time are abnormal.
I agree with you on that.
Could try heroin and go, "I'm not doing that anymore."
Right.
It's the greatest thing ever. It's not wanting to come or something.
I hope you kids are listening to this.
No, I'm just saying I don't do it, but...
No, but
I get it. Like if someone tells me, "God, that was great, I want to do it again," I go, "You're a normal fucking person."
Right. They always say human beings are... you talk to like counselors and stuff, and they always say... Human beings are the one thing about human beings, they're always running away from pain and toward pleasure, and they'll do it in even drug addicts are doing it in their own way. We're all doing it in one way or another. Now, you usually want to replace the pleasure with something productive that's going to actually help you, but we all, I mean, we all have most people have some kind of an addiction they have to contend with.
So, you're one of these guys who says they're addicted to working like that to me.
No.
The addiction, like I lifted weights one time when I was 15, and I lifted them once, I put them down, and I go, "Why would I ever do that?" Why would I ever pick that? What's the good reason? What am I going to play for the Giants? You know, like, reason for ever lifting a weight again? It was boring and it hurt.
Yeah, but see, for me, it was all about insecurity.
But the first time I ever got high, my God, why didn't I just. I was the first person ever to get high. Like, they probably thought, "God, what if I just stay like this forever?"
Right.
The problem is coming down, and then you got to deal with fucking people.
Well, that's the other thing is I think that you also have a chemistry. You know, some people have a chemistry. Like I can't drink. I can't drink. If I drink, I feel sick. I don't get. Yeah, but I can drink good wine, but I can get buzzed. But when I get drunk, if I drink whiskey, I'll throw up.
I saw you throw up.
You remember that?
At the Upfronts.
I was chasing some girl around. I had a red mouth. I was disgusting. Wait a minute. Hold on. It was a phase.
No, it was at the
David Faustino, sweet guy,
Pasadena. They had those Fox parties.
I remember that very well. I was drinking wine out of a bottle.
You were throwing up. But I get like, they call like alcohol a disease. My buddy Norm MacDonald has a great bit about calling addictions diseases. Like with gambling. He goes, they call gambling a disease, but it's the only disease where you could win a bunch of money. You know, it's like there's an upswing to it. And drinking,
It's true.
Yeah. You know, I don't, it's, you know what, I think that's a cop out. I don't think it's a disease.
I think for me, I never grew up religious, but I've always had this fear. It's a real fear too that I'm gonna die and whoever the maker is gonna look at me and go, "You had all this fucking potential, you are a white male in America, and you came up with a great family and nothing bad happened to you, and you didn't do the best you could do." I actually have a fear of I was always afraid I'd regret not working hard enough. That's a neurosis.
I've always had a fear that an old friend would ask me to do a podcast on an afternoon where I had nothing to do.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Some of our fears come true.
This thing is going to be huge.
No, so you fear, like, first of all, the white male thing, get over that.
Yeah, I know.
It's easier to be black president nowadays.
Of course.
Yeah, come on, get over
it. No, I'm just saying that I think that you feel like you've got something
in
you.
Well, don't you feel like you've underachieved in life? I mean,
all the time.
Really? Well, that's because your old man probably wanted you to be a senator or something.
Yeah. Well,
so my father climbed roofs. All I had to do was basically get on the fire department. I would have done better.
My father ran the biggest investment bank in the world.
That's what I mean. You know, your father probably wanted you to like be like a Bernie Madoff or something.
Well, I think a lot of it's also I grew up overseas in very poor countries, and I would see I'd be in Yemen. I'd be in Yemen, and I'd see a guy with leprosy.
What did you grow up in, a palace in Yemen?
Well, what happens is when you grow up in and your father works for a multinational company, you grow up in Saudi Arabia. or you grew up in Pakistan or India, what happens is people need jobs. Yeah. So you grow up with like somebody cooking your meals. You grow up with Saudi Arabia, we had to have a chauffeur because women couldn't drive. So my mom had to have something. So what happens is when you're a kid and you're in Yemen and I see a guy with leprosy with no nose and I'm 12 years old and no fingers and he's on the street looking for food and he's got no money. What happens to you is you go, hold on. How come I was just born lucky. There was a mistake in the math here. I didn't deserve this. Yeah. And that guy has no money. My mother, I remember keeping a woman alive in India this is in the 70s. She would feed her every morning.
That's just evil, keeping a woman alive in India. That's torture.
That's torture. But she'd give her a bowl of rice and curry.
For death.
Yeah. But
stop feeding me.
Stop feeding me.
I want to slowly die.
I was in Africa. I was in Africa and Kenya, and it was outside the airport. I saw a guy dead on the street. He was just dead.
Right.
And it was because he died of the no one was taking care of him. He was a homeless guy in Africa. You don't want to be homeless in Africa.
No, that's awful.
Yeah, being homeless in the United States is bad. Being homeless in Africa, you're really in trouble.
I wouldn't want to have a home in Africa.
But well, there's some on the African Riviera. Let me tell you, Seychelles.
I did stand up in Afghanistan for the troops.
So did I.
Kandahar.
So did I.
That's like biblical stuff. I don't know how those people.
Well, Kandahar. I mean, it was the craziest thing I've ever seen. It's like Mad Max.
Yeah. And
did you drive through Kabul?
Yeah. I remember looking at over the hills going, like, God, that's fresh heroin. I said to myself, I would love to do some heroin that a teenage girl hasn't shit out at gunpoint in the Bronx at a hotel. I would love to do that just one time.
Just where it really comes from. You're right at the source.
Yeah.
Fields of poppies.
No, I don't know how. Again, this country, I don't know how people could want to ever leave this country.
Well, but that's what I mean is when you grow up and you see that and you say, I'm really lucky.
Yeah.
I better make good on the fact that I won the fucking
toss.
But
you went the other way. Like, your father is a finance guy and you became a creative person and you're successful at it.
Yeah.
You know?
But because I'm maybe because that's all I could do. I don't think I could do anything else. I tried to work at a bank. I was going crazy.
Yeah, I don't think I can't see.
I looked at my father and I said, look, I can't do this and I need your money to send me to theater school.
Right.
Because I'm starting to dislike myself.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even recognize myself anymore. I'm speaking like the guys I work with.
I probably think you were gay if you want to go to theater school.
Yes, especially because I was fucking dating a guy at the time. But the point is, no, my dad, my poor dad who grew up poor, just looked at me and he didn't know what to do with me. I remember looking at his face. We were at a Notre Dame game.
Yeah.
In South Bend. And he flew me there. He had a plane. He used to fly little planes.
Wow.
And he flew me there and it was like father son time. He could barely deal with me, the poor guy, because he was like,
I met your father once.
Yeah, it's like living with a foreigner. Yeah. It's a fucking guy who grew up with no money, made good, and now he's got this son who's a fucking, you know, like never did well in school, jumping around. Like, I was a wrestler, and you know, he liked that I was a wrestler.
Energy, all that shit.
You know, I was a good athlete.
A kid with energy is very annoying.
And also weird. Like, I'd show up with a weird hat on. He'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? And I remember sympathizing with the guy because he'd look at me, and when I told him I wanted to be an actor, he looked at me and he went, well, I'll pay for theater school.
Oh, that's nice.
Poor guy. But that's you know, he had to let me follow my dream, and now I'm fucking famous. No,
well,
at least
solid,
I mean
you're a solid G-list celebrity.
I'm a solid G-list celebrity.
You know, both of us.
And I'm interviewing Artie Lang.
But
you've made a different thing
with my father. I can remember like I remember watching, no one ever skied or golfed in my neighborhood. I remember being 10 years old and my father would come home from work and he'd have like all insulation and sheetrock on his arm from climbing roofs all day. And I saw somebody skiing on TV and I said, hey, Dad, next vacation, can we go skiing? And he looked at me and he said, stop being a jerk off. That's honestly what he said. And I told that story in therapy and people think it's bad. And I said, well, I was being a jerk.
Exactly.
I just worked 11 hours all day. Let's go skiing. Get the fuck away from me.
I think that's good for a boy. I think it's good to grow up with a sense of perspective and a sense that you don't get everything you want.
No, you have to say no to kids. Well, how are you as a father? You spoil your kids?
No, I don't. No? No, because my mother's 100% Sicilian. So I love your mother.
Yeah,
I came up with that Italian, also the Italian notion of that Catholic guilt where I'd get, there wasn't a Christmas that went by, and I'm not exaggerating, where I'd get gifts, and they would say, you know, you're lucky. There are some kids that get an orange and a sock.
That's right.
And they're happy. And so it immediately comes with all kinds of guilt. I was never given anything without also being given a healthy dose of how lucky I was and how some kids get lint.
Yeah, I can remember getting an orange and saying, can I have a sock? And they would say, no. That's how unlucky I was. Can I get the sock even? Like, fuck
can I,
you.
Can I just get the sock? Your dad, sock. You told me a great story about your dad when he was fixing an air conditioning and these dogs were barking.
My father was like, my father was a kind of like the stuff he did, even taking care of me, like people with the diapers would take him away. He threw me on the field during a World Series game and just told me to meet him at shortstop. I was 10 years old at the Yankee Stadium. And we snuck down and Reggie Jackson hit the 3 home runs and the Yankees made it the last out. And he threw me on the field and said, just go to shortstop. For 20 minutes, I was walking around and he just somehow found me. I don't know.
Unbelievable.
But, we would go install an air conditioner across the street at these two old women who lived in an apartment across the street. And they had these two little rat-looking Paris Hilton-type dogs.
Yeah, and 2 hours.
So they would be in the kitchen, and the two dogs would follow us in, and we're trying to put an air conditioning unit in, and the dogs go, like they wouldn't shut up. So my father saw a suitcase in the closet, and he took the suitcase out, opened it, and just put the dog in the suitcase and just zipped it. And just calmly didn't care. Like, give him a little air hole. And just we calmly put the air conditioner in, and he just saw the heads going,
God.
You know, we thought that was funny, but you know, now it's everybody's old.
One time, my dog died of 11 years. My dog Piggy, wait a minute, and you know
your
what?
Dog Piggy.
Yeah, when a dog dies, though, you know, I'm not that sentimental. I love my dog, but it's time to go. It's a dog.
It's a fucking dog.
My girlfriend at the time was crying. She was crying. But the playoffs were, you know, and I didn't want to miss the playoffs, but I was going to bury her in Topanga Canyon. But that by the time I got there, my girlfriend and the dog. And my girlfriend's crying, and I put the dog in a suitcase. I ended up putting it on, and I remember coming back. I go, there's a Samsonite and a Bill Blass. Which one should I shoot? I don't care. I guess the Bill Blass. And so I put my dog in a Bill Blass suitcase and buried her the next day.
I used to do a joke in my act that my girlfriend hated because she was a big dog person, and she said to me, she wanted me to get a dog all the time and to keep it here. And I skeeve dogs. I don't like them being around because I think they're dirty. And she would go, come on, let's get a dog. And I said to her, I said, honey, I get grossed out when you shit in my apartment. The girls don't like when you say that.
They don't like when they say that.
I don't know. I do, but a lot of people are telling me since I've gotten clean to get a dog because they say it's very therapeutic and stuff.
Well, I don't know about that. I don't like when people say dumb shit like that because they don't know what you're going through.
Yeah, I don't know. What am I going to
do? You know, people with advice. I think as I get older, I'm very careful with advice because most people are not going to listen to it. They don't need it. They know it anyway.
Sometimes if you're asking for it, but some people really are adamant about forcing advice on you.
It drives me crazy. Yeah. You know everything. It's like you don't know the answers. You know the answers. It's a question of whether or not. It's like my problem with the government tries to legislate good health in one way or another, whether it's Bloomberg with trans fatty acids. Listen, there are a lot of educated people that know exactly what smoking does to them, but they smoke anyway for a lot of other fucking reasons.
Right.
You know, I thank you for putting on the pack that it causes lung cancer. That must have slipped my mind.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Well, to me, it's natural selection. Let the weak people smoke and die off.
Or just let people make their own choice and take their own risks.
Yeah,
my grandma smokes
more. I mean, they should make drugs legal, too. Who cares?
I agree with you.
I mean, if heroin was legal, would you do heroin?
I mean,
no.
Well, I'm too busy.
Yeah, exactly.
And I like my veins.
And the booze, you know.
But does heroin shred you up a little bit? No, it's blow.
No, blow, just the right amount.
I'm very cut, as it is. You know that. You're impressed. You're quietly impressed.
Seen it. Yeah, we've worked together. We've changed in front of each other for sketches.
Yeah, you've seen how flexible I am as well. I still have retained a lot of my flexibility, which we should actually.
Is your hair like not? Is that really your hair?
Yeah, but I take Propecia.
It's the same exact hair you've had for.
Seriously?
Yeah, it is.
Are you kidding me? Because I was looking in the mirror, thinking to myself, I lost my. I'm.
No, it looks the same. Like there's no gray hair or nothing.
Oh yeah, no.
Really?
My parents are that same way. People think I dye it. I've never dyed my hair in my life. I did a movie a year ago and I dyed my hair black because they did it, but I've never dyed my hair. But you can tell I haven't dyed my hair because it's kind of a shitty brown.
Right. No, it's not. It's like.
Oh, you see, I'm a good looking guy. Is that what you're saying? I still retain a lot of my youthful. I got tight fitting skin.
I'm trying to see if I can lure you into being unbelievably boring on your podcast. You're one of those guys. Your hair looks good. Get out. Don't stop. 10 minutes.
10 minutes on it. Are you serious? I actually started looking at my hair. I can just see the top of my head.
No, you look the same as you. I've known you 17 years. You look the same, pretty much the same, you know?
I had a lot of work done.
Good job.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. So now, what is your, do you have a daily like ritual that you do, that you stick to deal with sobriety? Or is it getting is it getting easier?
Right. As you're doing this interview, it was right when I really try to work on myself.
Right. Good. So well, feel free to do that, whatever meditation.
I'm in danger of a relapse. No, I don't know. The problem is, like, I got this job now. It's 10 p.m. to 1 a.m., which are comedian hours. You know?
That's actually good, though.
But it gives me the day. I just finished writing the book, so I would write the book during the day. And then I do stand-up on the weekends on the road, you know? But, yeah. You know, I don't know. I can't do anything. I can't gamble. I can't drink.
Well, that's the problem is finding like something boredom. To do. It's yeah, fucking boredom.
My girlfriend lives down by Philadelphia. She comes up on like the weekends and stuff. And then.
And that's just lovemaking 24/7, I'm sure.
Yeah, not really. No, quite frankly, okay. No. I don't think she's satisfied at all on that
that's
level.
That's crazy.
I am. I'm fine with her. Everything's fine with me. But, you know, you know, girls say annoying shit. During yeah. sex, you know.
Like what?
Like, I want to come too, you know, stuff like that. But she's younger. She's 28 years old.
Oh, nice. And, how old are you now?
I'm 45.
So am I.
Yeah. And same she was age. Born, she was actually, we have a lot in common. She was born the day I got my first DUI. Her parents are very excited. Her father's a doctor. She said she comes from such a very classy family, and her father, just whenever he sees me, just shakes his head like this could not be who my daughter's dating. Like,
that's not true, though. You're you know who you are. You're an original.
Yeah,
and you are the funniest human being on the planet. You've done despite all the shit you've gone through. You've done very well, and you continue to do really well.
I have a little bit of money. Yeah.
Yeah, but you've also, you know, there are people, that most everybody, you're like one of those guys, one thing to be a celebrity and be like, ah, he's a fucking jerk off. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anybody on the planet that would ever call you a jerk off. In fact, I would say that you're probably, like, if they showed your face on a Megatron at a fucking game,
yeah.
You know, and they show Mario, you know, whoever, Lopez or whatever, and I like him. He seems like
I would
a nice
love
guy.
That.
But
I would love to go head to head with him.
He's getting booed, you're getting cheered, you know.
Yeah. It's happened. I've been on the Megatron.
Yeah, and they go crazy. For you,
well, a lot of very well wishers.
You know? That's right. I love what you said one time. You're like, I was with you on the street, and guys, like, hey, Artie, hey, how you doing? I go, hey, man, you're famous now. He goes, yeah. If I liked fucking guys that looked like plumbers,
if I was willing to fuck guys who have their own bread route every morning in Jersey City, I'd be like Warren Beatty. They are so into me, those guys.
For me, the more I do stand up and, you know, the Joe Rogan podcast and you do the Hangover, you get bromanced.
No, absolutely.
You know, guys like you.
Oh, for the Hangover.
It's never girls, it's always guys, you know.
Yeah. The Stern Show, it's guys, but that was a big guy thing.
Yeah.
But
do you miss the Stern Show?
Yeah, I miss being there. Yeah. I don't miss the schedule. The schedule was, I don't know how I did that.
What was it?
Well, it was like having a paper route. We were 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. was the show.
Yeah, I can't.
I do stand up on the weekends. It was just brutal. I mean, the show itself was the most fun. The most. It was like being in the third grade throwing spitballs every day. It was just immature, great fun. But the schedule, you know, destroyed me, you know.
Yeah. Stern's been doing it for 40 years.
He's got a work ethic that's unbelievable.
Is that what it is?
Oh, God.
What is he? Does he go home at 10 or does he?
He go. Well, the show went as long as he wanted it to go, you know. So we get off about a quarter to 11, actually, and then he, you know, would work out and be in bed by 8 p.m. every night, you know.
God, that's that's actually a Spartan lifestyle.
Oh, it is. I don't know what that means, but yeah, I'm like, yeah, of course.
Of course it is.
I would get out, literally roam around 6th Avenue in a daze, like, what do we just do? Like, oh, you know, and then... Yeah. I'd have a sandwich.
I remember I saw you at the fucking... at the diner, I saw you, and you saw some blonde walk in, and this beautiful blonde, and you guys just finished the show, and then I showed up and joined her. I wasn't banging her. She was just a friend of mine. It made me look
very
good.
Very aggravating.
Yeah, I think I told you.
It was fun, but the schedule, I couldn't... Yeah. It was a dream job, but I couldn't deal with...
How many years did you do it?
8.5 years.
8.5 years.
Yeah. Jesus. You know, and then, but
you keep in touch with Howard?
I talk to him every once in a while. Yeah. He's very nice. He's like, you know, when I see him, he's like, are you okay? Is everything okay? Because I make people worry, you know.
Loved.
Yeah. Well, no, the people worry.
Do you want to do movies anyway? Are they going to do Dirty Work too? Or
no, I don't
is
think
that,
so. It's been 15 years since one. So I don't think, there's not a clamor.
Listen, you never know. It's not a clamoring?
I don't think so.
All right.
I've been in 6 studio movies that I've had a big part in, and I've got a total of 2 stars in the New York Post. I've cost Hollywood, I think it's a total of $80,000.
What does the New York Post know? I remember when you got Jerry Maguire, but you got cut out.
I got cut out of that.
I worked
for 2 days with Tom Cruise.
Yeah. You told me he jumped rope between
it was takes. Unbelievable. I never saw it. It was the scene where he's fighting with Kelly Preston and it was like a steady cam thing.
Yeah.
And he'd have to yell at her in a high energy sort of argument. And there was a guy whose job was to hold his jump rope, and Tom Cruise would jump rope real fast and then go right into the scene so he'd look like he was out of breath, you know?
Oh, wow.
And the assistant director who had been around forever would just roll his eyes. It was so funny. He'd go like, okay, Tom's jumping. We're rolling. Okay, Tom, we're ready. Okay.
Assistant directors.
He was so annoyed. He goes, okay, Tom's jumping. We're rolling. Okay. Just let me get the fuck out of here.
I did a reading with him, and it
you
was
did?
Yeah, it was for Todd Phillips called me up and said, "Hey, I want you to do a reading." And
Todd's like, a good guy.
He's a great guy. So it was me and Todd and Eric Stoltz, Amy Smart, and I think Paula Wagner, somebody like that, like a big producer, and then Tom Cruise, who shows up just about 20 minutes late, and he says, "I'm really sorry." And then he has a Penta water, and they laid out
What's
6
Penta,
Penta is some kind of like expensive bottle of water, and they laid out 6 pieces of sashimi, yellowtail sashimi from Masahisa with a little jalapeno on each one, and he ate those, drank some water, and then we did the reading, and he was, and I had a lot of my scenes, you know, kind of with him. He did it full out.
Really?
He was unbelievable. Then we sat and he asked all of us questions, like about what we thought of the script. And when that guy listens to you, it's literally like you're the only human being.
All right, he's like a politician.
Yeah,
almost,
and when I got us, when we were done, finally he goes, "You're very talented."
Really?
You're very talented.
He probably wanted to fuck you.
I would have made out with him, and I'm straight.
But no, but I mean, I think
I'm not. What am I saying? No, I'm not going to kiss you. I don't think he's gay, by the way. so then that day, I had 2 pit bulls in my backyard. Didn't stop whoever from having. I had a fruit basket, fruit, alcohol, you know, cheese basket. Yeah, I used to have 2 pit bulls in my backyard. But I walked out there. My dogs were just roaming free, but there was a basket on my picnic table that said, "Thank you for your time and your talent. Thank you for your time and talent, Tom."
Really?
And it was a huge basket of, I mean, obviously he didn't do it. He said somebody did.
No,
do it.
I am,
I see
another
him,
guy named Tom.
I see him 6 months later, and I'm talking to him, and I say, "Hey, man, we did that reading." And in the middle of the conversation, he remembers, and he goes, "Your timing was, you were great in that reading." And Jeremy Piven is my witness. He was right next to me. And he goes, "Thank you very much." And he goes, "You were great in that reading." Mm-hmm. And I go, "Thank you." He goes, "Your timing was, it was unbelievable." And he said, "You were great in that reading 13 times. I think I said thank you 13 times.
Do you think you could have told me the story not on your podcast? Don't you think you could have told me this story like at another time?
I wish there was like a punchline.
You could have called me or something.
But if the punchline was then we kissed, then that would have been worth it, right?
Yeah, no.
All right, next time I tell you that, I'll end it with something sexual. Shit.
Not even that would have made it worth it.
Ah, fuck. I'm not a journalism major.
We're sitting here. I'm like, what the hell am I doing?
Where am I
going?
No,
that's an interesting story.
Thanks a lot. We'll just edit it out. We'll edit the story out.
I'm trying to think. No, it is when you meet somebody super famous, though. It's very.
Who have you met that you were starstruck?
Very disconcerting. Well, a lot like through the Stern Show because he had so many guests on a lot of people. I write about Bruce Springsteen called me at home.
No,
when I was when I got out of the psych ward after
all
my hell, and because he knew me through the show.
Wow.
And I would always defend him on the Stern Show. And
he's my favorite.
Out of nowhere, he called me and talked to me for an hour and a half.
You're kidding.
He said, "How you doing?" And he wanted to see if I was all right. And it was very, very surreal, like to be like in my bedroom in Jersey in the dark going around. And I'd ruined my life again. I've done that like 4 or 5 times. I'm like, how am I going to get out of this? And the phone rang and he was like, Artie? Yeah, it's Bruce Springsteen. And a mutual friend of ours had told me he might call, so I knew it was him. And he goes, "You know, this one was something I'm thinking about you. And, you know, you need any help?" He gave me a number to call. And
wow.
I never called him, but I always thought it'd be funny if I, like, every day I called him and go, "You want to do something?"
You know,
"You want to play volleyball? I just learned how to rotate and rehab."
I went backstage and talked to him for an hour and a half. And
Did you?
Yeah, I was so excited.
Where?
At the LA Coliseum.
Oh, yeah.
And then I saw him like a little bit later at Sun Valley, Idaho, and I saw Patty, his wife, and I said, well, how's Bruce? She goes, well, you can ask him himself. He was right there. And I found myself, I had my arms folded,
yeah,
but they were folded too tight around my body.
Right.
And I kind of panicked, and I went, well, you guys skiing? And they went, nah, not this year. We're letting the kids. I go, yeah, my feet are killing me. And I didn't mean, I meant to say, I've been skiing too, but my feet are killing me, but I left out I've been skiing too. I just said, my feet are killing me. And there was an awkward pause, and I go, I'll see you later, and I ran out, and I've never forgiven myself.
We should have a podcast where you just tell me stories about meeting celebrities.
See how fast I did? See how fast I went? That'll be the next one.
It'll be like the Brian and Artie podcast. It's just like, okay, all right, let me tell you about the time I met Sean Williams.
And nothing happened. Sean Williams Scott. And he wasn't as muscular back then, but
yeah.
But now. But we did talk. We did talk about working out. Oh, Jesus.
Actually, if I had to pick, it's funny, like, I mean, if I had to pick some of my favorite sketches of Mad TV, a couple of them, several of them are me and you together.
Yeah.
Like, I really love that wrestling thing.
That was fun. We just allowed to improvise that.
The two Italian guys selling the stolen shit off the. Yep. And.
I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Remember Air Guitar Store with Joe Walsh? And there's a lot of fun ones that we did together.
What else did we do?
I think that's it, actually.
Pool Boy? No.
No, I was never in that.
You were never in that.
Now, you got a lot of gay fans from that.
I did get a lot of gay fans. Yeah. And a lot of mail from prison. Because I was in a blonde wig with a Speedo and
I know
high
a lot of
heels.
Prisoners will tell you they'd rather have a guy after a while. Like, even heterosexual, I'd rather have a guy and a male.
Is that right?
When I was in,
I call them gay.
I have to apologize for this in advance, but when I was in L.A. County Jail, the guy next to me, Hispanic guy, he was in there for 9 years. He taught me how to make a pussy out of a toilet paper thing.
Is that right?
Well, you take the toilet paper roll and you dampen it. You put it in water.
Yeah.
And
let me write this down.
Okay. You put it in water, and then you take the cardboard thing out, and then you put like gel in it, and then you like moisten it with your hand. And in prison, they fucked that.
Really?
And,
it's like a fleshlight.
He would tell me about it, and he would go, yeah, well, but it's like, but it made a, he said, he goes, you'll never fuck a woman again. He goes, it doesn't, bitch, it doesn't charge you nothing. So passionate about it. And he just, the way he made it sound like, I've never tried it, but.
Well, I'm going to try it tonight.
Yeah.
So are a lot of the fans of this podcast.
You're right. This is an exclusive. I never said this before in public, but yeah, you put the toilet paper in water, and then you take the cardboard thing out in Vaseline, and then you moisten it, and you just go to town.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I'm so horny now.
Yeah.
I didn't think I got a heart on my own fucking show.
On the ferry, there's a bathroom you could jump off, and I've done it.
It's a 7-minute ferry.
Yeah.
I'm long stayed. It takes me a long time. So how often do you do the show? You do your
five nights a week.
Nick DiPaolo. I'm glad to see him doing something. He's great.
Yeah, he's real funny. Yeah, he's got some of the funniest jokes ever. I really like
it. And you're writing a lot of stand-up now.
Yeah, I got another about an hour and a half of stuff that I'm going to put on tape
great.
And then do.
And it's all about being in rehab and all that?
A lot of it is, but, you know, a lot of it is just my colorful take on things. You know, I...
You going to write another movie?
No, it's like,
why do it?
The first book made money, and they offered me money to write a second. Nothing I've ever written movie-wise. Like, why would I do it? I don't have time to do it for free again. Like, me and Frank wrote Beer League for free.
Yeah.
And we were all gung-ho. Let's get this made. It took 5 years.
Yeah.
We're proud of it and everything, but it didn't make any money, so it's not. You know,
I remember reading
that.
It was such
movie.
A good script, but it's fine. Making movies now in this market is impossible. It's basically like I'm gonna spend 5 years to write to do a movie that nobody's gonna see.
Well, the good thing about Beer League is Comedy Central and Showtime bought it, and they play it constantly, so there's an audience. Like those kids who quote it to me, that's nice.
Yeah,
and some critics liked it. So we're proud of it and everything, but it doesn't make any sense to make another one.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So you're going to do your plan now for the rest of your life, Nick and Artie show until it's number one. I'm working it out for you.
Thank you.
And then you're gonna do stand up on the weekends.
Well, I do. Yeah.
You're gonna do my podcast at least once a week.
I would. I think we've developed some sort of a niche here where you talk about your life to me.
Well,
and take time out of my day
about my dreams. I haven't even told you about my goals. Damn it. Oh, we'll do a goal workshop next podcast.
Yeah, I'm used to the guy. I know how to talk about goals from rehab.
I love when people do that. I love this whole fucking, this whole, this. Have you done a goal workshop? Have you done a dream board? Have you done a dream board? No, I haven't.
A goal workshop.
Apparently you're supposed to like write out exactly what you want and see your goals.
Oh.
I don't know.
I've never done that.
I've always had a general idea of.
I don't know. I'm not good at preparing. That's why I wasn't good in school. I'm not good at anything you have to prepare for.
Well, you know,
I like to wing it. I like to go and just see what I, so everything I've ever done in life probably could be better.
Well,
but I don't have time. I can't. I get antsy and I don't like to prepare.
I remember we'd be sitting around a freaking, you know, a table and with Mad TV and you'd get, and guys like Phil Lamar was still, he went to Yale. They were
no,
such
I
smart.
Know. He's very
and they would be literally
very
be they'd
precise.
Be yeah, and they'd be debating whether monkey or midget was a funnier word.
No, I know.
And you would end up on the couch just kind of rolling around saying dumb shit.
Well, no,
and then I would just literally be gone. I couldn't. I have no.
I don't have to. But that's how you get great. And because everything Phil Lamar did was spot on, perfect. Because he prepared, he wrote and rewrote stuff and rehearsed it. And
whenever you see somebody who's great, like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, you see them, and you know, you watch these guys, these virtuosos or whatever. The reason they're great is because they can practice all day. Every day,
yeah. You gotta like what you gotta be great at something, and you gotta like doing it because then you constantly do it, you know, and then you get even better at it.
I like
if something you're naturally great at, you like doing,
yeah,
and you so you do it all the time, you'll get better at it. Then that's when you become like I think a Michael Jordan,
yeah, which doesn't necessarily correlate to happiness. It's just
no, that becomes obsession. It becomes the direct opposite of happiness.
Are you happy?
No, I don't think so.
You know it's great. Harriet Doerr, she won no reason you know her, and I don't.
Who?
I've never. She won the National Book Award at 85 years old, right?
Yeah.
And she was a housewife until she was 45. Like she didn't start writing until she was 45.
Yeah.
And somebody said to her when she was given a lecture about her book or something, and it won the National Book Award. And this woman said, "Were you happy being a housewife for 30 years?" And she said, "Would you repeat the question?" And the woman said, "Were you happy for the 30 years you were a housewife?" And Harriet Doerr said, "I've never heard of anybody being happy for 30 years. And why would anybody who was happy write a book?"
You're right. There's no time if you're happy to write a book.
I don't think you can be a stand-up comic.
You're out being happy. You're out running around, jumping around like a maniac. I don't, you know.
I don't think you can be a stand-up comic and
I think a lot
content.
Of artists equate happiness with stupidity. I don't think that's true, but I think a lot of them do. I think a lot of, like, you know, like, look at the greatest writers. They're all, Hemingway blew his fucking head off. Hunter S. Thompson blew his head off.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Fitzgerald drank himself to death. You know, I think at the end, I'd rather be, if I had kids, I want them to be good looking and stupid. That is it. That is the recipe for, like, Paris Hilton doesn't know what the fuck's going on.
No.
She's ecstatic, bro.
Right. She's got her phone and she's got her, she's an innocent.
No, yeah. Good looking and dumb is the recipe to happiness.
Well, I don't think you
but we
do.
We need smart people, otherwise we're not going to get, you know, the iPhone 6, you know. I don't think the people who invent that shit are happy. Steve Jobs wasn't happy either. All miserable. Ignorance is bliss, you know. It's like
In a way.
You've seen Yemen, you know. That's why you're unhappy.
Well, no, in a way you live to serve, right? I mean, maybe that's what the idea is. You know, the idea is... You know, maybe your happiness is secondary. What's more important is doing something that makes, I don't know about a difference, but certainly doing something that makes other people's lives a little better.
Right.
You know, when I'm up on stage and, you know, people are laughing, you're like, I can't believe I do this for a living, but at least I'm doing something that seems to be the right thing to do.
Yeah, it seems like a service on some level.
Yeah, I guess. I mean,
sure.
You get immune even to the laughter after a while. You certainly, you know, I mean, you see, I know this guy who's got a 17,000 square foot house in Florida.
Really?
It doesn't translate to any quotient of sort of the number of bedrooms in your house doesn't translate to the amount of happiness that you're going to, you know,
that's true.
Or fulfillment even, you know, whatever.
No, money certainly doesn't, you know.
Yeah, but if I had money, I think I'd, real money,
but
I think I'd fly around in a hell. I don't have helicopter money. Like, I don't have private plane money. That's what I want.
What about your father's plane? You're not going to inherit
it? No, he sold it. And besides, that wasn't like, it wasn't like a jet. Saved by the Bell.
No, I told somebody. I told him to call way earlier.
All right. Well, listen, man.
No, it's my mother. This will be a very.
Oh, good. Listen. Let's listen. This is
Ma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm hearing your voice. Are you on your cell phone?
No, I'm home. I'm not on my cell phone. No.
Well, your cell phone goes
All right. I'm sorry. I think I guess it's off or something. I don't know.
You're all right. Okay. I
want
to know, I'm going to the Whole Foods. Do you want me to bring you any food?
What can you get me?
What can I get you? I can get you chicken, but I can get you, I don't know, whatever they got there.
All right. You mind coming over and making me a salad or something?
No, I will. As a matter of fact, I got some in my bag here. I made a salad with some chicken I had. And I have chicken chow mein that I didn't eat that I have here for you, too. And a tilapia. All right. Okay, so you want me to bring you salad, too?
Yeah, just bring as much food as you can.
Okay. Nah,
and some bread.
Some bread. Oh, bread? You're not supposed to be eating bread.
can I get some cold cuts?
No.
No? Why?
Because, Artie, you can't eat all that.
All right. Why can't I eat all that? You bring it over. You just talked about a ton of food. Why can't I have some cold cuts?
That's not chicken. Wait, who's there? Is your Ann Lassen?
No. No, you're on Brian Cowan's podcast right now.
You're on my podcast, and we're loving it.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
I'm good, darling. I'm good. Your son's still funny as it gets. I'm sure he talks about me all the time.
Nah, Brian, it's a shame. Brian has a tumor he just found. No, okay, my thanks. If you want to bring over food, I'll be here.
Are you sure? Are you kidding me? I don't need to make this trip for nothing.
No, you don't have to bring. Don't worry about it. I got enough stuff here.
He's a great son.
Okay, I bet you don't have any food there.
I got some food. I got leftover.
That's
food.
An Italian mother.
I'll just order some chicken parm from across the street.
No, you don't order chicken parm.
It's not that bad, Ma. It's not fattening or anything. It's not.
Oh, please. Okay, Art.
The sauce is better than you think.
Keep eating, Art. Keep eating. Yeah, there's a fried cutlet and it's cheese and it's everything else.
All right.
All right, goodbye. Bye, Brian.
Bye, darling.
See you later.
That's so funny. Man, that's an Italian mother. No, no, not chicken parm, no.
By the way, I want to let the audience know I'm 45 years old.
Hi, but your mother, when we were doing Mad TV, your mother sent you calzones.
My mother sent
from
me.
From Newark.
The best part, my mother watched the show, and she hated the way my hair looked. I was wearing a wig, and the writers were in the room. We were going over a sketch, and a FedEx package came down for my mother, and I opened it up in front of writers, like all these cynical comedy writers, and it was a vent brush with a note, a post-it saying, give this to the hair person, tell them to brush your hair with this. my God, that was, it was like a blue vent brush or something that she thought of. I'm like, Mom, I'm wearing a wig.
Yeah, and she sent you calzones.
No, she sent me calzones, and my first birthday out in L.A., she sent me 5 Sicilian peaches and bubble wrap.
I remember that.
My apartment at the Oakwoods was looked as bubble wrap.
You were walking around, and you were walking around the set at Redmar eating pizza. I got this in Jersey. I was like, you fucking mama's boy.
I know, you're
I've
right.
I've never had that.
I can't sum up what's wrong with me, but what you just heard there is an exclusive. There's got to be something in there that's...
Yeah. No, you're a mama's boy. Your mommy took...
Oh, my God. Yeah, I love it.
I haven't lived at home since I was 13.
I know. Well, poor kid. Saw Yemen.
I saw Yemen. Yeah. So I got the one thing I got over you is I saw Yemen.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's why you're a happier person than I am.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I think you're... I'll take your talent any day.
No, you could see tragedy and not care about it. See, yeah. I care about it. That's my problem.
I lose sleep over tragedy, actually, but I always just kind of try to...
What about the
I try to turn it into something positive, like this podcast.
No, I know. You have, and you've done that.
Thank you. Any more questions before we...
No, I think this is great. I mean...
Good. You'll come back, huh? Maybe next week.
Did you ever meet any of the NSYNC guys? You want to talk about that?
I'm glad I did meet. I think I met that guy Joey once. And,
Joey Fatone?
Yeah, that was probably the highlight of my life.
Well, it's funny. The best thing about... See, I like celebrities. You see it, like Tom Cruise is real prepared about stuff. He's got to eat this and he's intense.
Yeah, yeah.
My favorite Clint Eastwood story ever. Some guy directed him I forget who it was. It was a younger director, and it was like one of those bad movies he did before. Like, he did The Unforgiven. Like, he did a string of bad movies. And the director went up to him after a take and said, "Okay, Clint, can we try it one more time like this?" And Eastwood looked at him and said, "Was I in focus?" And the guy said, "Yeah." He goes, "Then let's move on." You know, some people just, you know, they're naturals.
They're just naturals.
They don't have to prepare.
Well, you know, it's celebrity's funny. I was in London.
Oh, Christ.
And
here comes this train. We can't stop it. The Brian Met a Celebrity train is pulling out of the station.
Listen.
We're in London?
It'll take like 25 minutes at the most.
And
then we got to wrap it up. I met Olivia. We were in the back of a limo doing lines, and that's the end of the story.
Now, what happened?
I met this girl. I'm with a bunch of people. This girl, she likes you. She's a cute little blonde. I'm like, all right, I don't know. Her name is Emma.
Emma Stone?
No. She's driving. This is like 15, 20 years ago. She's driving us around in this Mercedes with a driver, and we're all in there. I'm like, Jesus, what the fuck? Then there's this black girl I'm looking at who's delicious, and I'm like, I want that girl.
Jada Pinkett.
Nope. And so I go, who is this girl? She's got a driver. She goes, she's Baby Spice.
Oh, yeah.
And Scary Spice.
Girl.
No, that was...
Oh, no, wait.
Baby Spice was the blonde.
Scary Spice is the
Baby Spice is blonde, so she likes you. And I'm trying to hit on Scary.
Yeah.
And then, but Baby Spice sees her ex-soccer player boyfriend, professional soccer, this tall black guy.
Yeah.
She dropped me like a hot potato. Literally like, oh, fuck you.
Yeah, yeah.
She's with the soccer player. And then I'm moving in on Scary Spice. I got nothing from her either.
Really?
And that's how the story... Yeah, yeah. All my charms, all my best material, everything else, and nothing. I didn't get lucky with the Spice Girls.
Have you ever had sex with a real famous chick, like an A-list chick?
Yes.
Oh.
I can't say.
Oh, come on.
I know. But I have. I've been in L.A. a long time.
More famous than
what
Scary
do you want from
Spice?
Me? No, a little bit more.
All right, fine.
And it's all the same fucking thing.
Yeah. Anyway. I got a feeling that the celebrity's Tom Cruise.
Yeah, well, there it is. And he was wearing a wig, so that doesn't count.
Well, this has been great.
Artie Lang, I want to thank you for doing
no
Man
problem.
Thoughts with Brian Callen, brought
What's
to you by Audible.
Manny Thoughts.
Man Thoughts. You can call it Manny Thoughts. You can call it Nanny Thoughts.
This was fantastic.
Yeah, I'm going to get on the ferry now and go back to New York.
Go to sleep tonight dreaming of your meeting with
I got
Tom
two
Cruise.
Shows tonight.
No, I know. The Gotham is a great club, right?
Yeah.
That's where I taped my last special, actually.
Is that
right? I was at the Gotham on 23rd Street.
Right.
Will
you tweet that I'm going to be there and get your fans over there?
That's what I'll fucking do.
Tell, take some time and tweet. For God's sake, do me a solid.
How many followers you got on this thing?
A lot, like 50,000. I'm famous.
Are you?
What do you have, like a million?
I've only been doing it 6 months.
You must have a lot of followers.
So 115,000.
That's not bad. That's not bad. All
but
right.
I like doing this.
Thanks, guys, for listening. And this is Artie Lang, the funniest man on the planet. And one of my favorite people in the world.
I'm going to try to work the N-word into your play. Hey, all you fucking N-words. Go see Brian. No, I could do that. All right. Well, Brian, thank you. You're a good man. You're my old friend.
I love you, buddy. I love you,
all
too.
All right.
Pal.
Courtney, nice to meet you. And
you're the best.
I'll see you later.
And go to audiblepodcast.com/manthoughts to get a free download. How's that sound?
You've been listening to Man Thoughts with Brian Callen.